Take
That's
it
a
away,
good
Dr.
question.
Curtin.
No problem. That was a good question. So prednisolone is a steroid, okay? And how steroids work is that steroids are counter-regulatory hormones. Fancy way of saying they resist insulin. So what they do is that they actually cause the body to release sugar from the liver as opposed to store it. So whereas we are normally functioning to keep our blood sugars level, steroids are working in the opposite way to try to release blood sugar. So you would find that there's some patients who are started on steroids, especially oral steroids, for several reasons. There are many conditions that require it. And they go from not having any problems with their sugars at all to suddenly being diagnosed with diabetes, and in some cases, actually requiring insulin for control. But the good thing about it is that if their development of diabetes is solely due to being placed on the steroids, solely due to being placed on prednisolone, if they have a condition where that prednisolone can be weaned, meaning the doses can be decreased and then eventually be stopped, usually their blood sugar problem goes when the prednisolone is stopped. In some circumstances, they need to be on prednisolone lifelong, and therefore they have diabetes lifelong. But in this circumstance, we call that more secondary diabetes as opposed to the traditional type 2, because this is drug-induced diabetes. All right. And so it's not a failure of the patient in this circumstance to do the right things. It's diabetes caused by how the medication works in that circumstance.
All right. Thank you, Doc. Caller,
Let's take our call.
you're still there with us, caller?
Yes, sir.
Yes, please. The doctors are listening to you. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. Greetings to you,
Hi,
ma'am.
Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
The question is, when the sodium levels in our bodies are dropping, what are the signs?
When the sodium levels in our body is dropping?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, that's an interesting question for a diabetes discussion. But it can be linked, believe it or not, again, depending on the underlying illness. Low sodium levels tend to present in various ways. Usually, you tend to see it affecting more of the mental status. So persons might be acting confused. They might be acting drowsy.
In a coma.
If they're low sodium, right? They could be in a coma. And the other symptoms associated with low sodium levels are linked to what's the underlying cause. So if the low sodium level is due to, for example, thyroid problem, then they would have signs and symptoms in keeping with low thyroid. So things like weight gain, things like feeling slow, feeling depressed. So there's a whole range of things that could be associated with low sodium levels. But as I said, the major ones and the major serious ones are the things that affect brain function. So as I said, they feel drowsy, they behave lethargic, they may act confused, they may act not their normal self, and could deteriorate from there if it's not fixed in an appropriate time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, caller.
No problem.
You're very welcome. Just about 25 minutes away from the hour of 7 o'clock, you're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. This week's edition of the Better Health Radio Show is brought to you with the kind compliments of Servier Central America and the Caribbean. We've got Dr. Renee Boyce, and she has as our guest, Dr. Curtin. Go ahead, Doc.
We are going to move on right now to the management. And notice I said management and not treatment, because automatically with treatment, in the minds of persons, we think medication, pills and injections and so on. We are going to discuss the best ways to manage type 2 diabetes. And we're going to start with Dr. Curtin's pet area, her joie de vivre. Her reason for living.
Of course. And I'm actually going to give it a more of a rounded approach and finish with exercise, of course. So the approach to management, and again, I like that you use management and not treatment, because it's a multidisciplinary approach. Many things need to be addressed, and different personnel should ideally be involved whenever we're managing type 2 diabetes. It could be overwhelming for the patient, but once you have the right physician on board who can link you with the right personnel, it actually is quite a manageable condition. So when I approach managing type 2 diabetes, I like to think of it as the A, B, C, D, and E's. So A is your A1C, and I stress the patients know your values. Okay, you should know where your level of control is, and you should know what your target is. Some person's target A1C could be less than 6.5, some person's less than 7 is fine. And if you're a 90-year-old granny doing your own thing and living your life, right, less than 8% quite fine, perfect for you. Okay, the next thing is B, your blood pressure. So diabetes and hypertension tend to go very, very much hand in hand. So again, your blood pressure should be optimally controlled. Why? Because all of this is to reduce complications. That's the whole point in managing diabetes, reducing complications, which include the kidney disease, strokes, and heart attacks. The C is cholesterol, all right? So again, along with hypertension or high blood pressure, cholesterol likes to join the party. So you want to make sure that you control your cholesterol level. D is diet. Okay, so we have A, B, C, D is diet. And again, staying away from your simple sugars, again, your salt bread and your cake. I'm just going to keep saying that all evening long. The other thing is the E. The E is the exercise. That's where I come in. That's my joy. That's what I believe in. And that's where the evidence is. So aerobic exercise and strength-based exercise have been shown to aid in both the prevention and the management of diabetes. So there was one study that was done, pretty famous study that was done, that showed that brisk walking, so this is not walking and, you know, laughing on the phone. This is not walking and WhatsApping. This is walking and raising your heart rate for at least 20 to 30 minutes most days of the week. And that has been shown to reduce the risk of developing diabetes, especially in those who are what we call pre-diabetes, so a touch of sugar in Bajan parlance, that has been shown to reduce the risk of converting to full-on diabetes. And strength-based training has also been shown recently now to actually assist in lowering A1C, lowering cholesterol levels, and generally improving the management of diabetes. And of course, the S, and my ABCDEs is smoking. You can't forget it. Stop smoking. No other way to put it. Just don't smoke.
There's no other way to put it. Do not smoke. You can't say any other way, except the way that I like to say it. I've seen it in gas stations and I've seen it on cigarette boxes. The Minister of Health advises that smoking is bad for your health. Yes, it is. We have another caller. Let's state that call.
Hello, sir.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening, doctors. I just want to ask a question. If you are diabetic and you find that you go to the doctor and they tell you that you have bleeding in the back of your eye and a detached retina and you are diabetic, should that doctor decide in his mind to give you an operation, although you, if your blood sugar is high?
That's a complicated question, but it has a, we can answer it for you. So you have two ways of approaching this. So the first thing is recognizing that the diabetes contributed to the eye problem. All right, so uncontrolled diabetes, uncontrolled blood sugars puts you at risk of what we call new vessel formation. So that means blood vessels that shouldn't be at the back of the eye form at the back of the eye. And because they shouldn't be there, they're actually very fragile. So instead of being sturdy, they're at risk of bleeding and basically disturbing your vision and making it difficult for you to see. And unfortunately, then the retina, which is the area at the back of the eye, can tear and unfortunately impair your vision. So that's where diabetes was linked there. The decision to go to surgery has many, I should say, many things that influence that decision. And it all is based on how the surgery is being done. Now, whenever you're operating, you always want certain things to be controlled. Your blood pressure should be good, ideally. Your blood sugar should be good, ideally. But we also balance that against the risk of waiting to get it under control. So usually in certain circumstances, I can't speak for the ophthalmologist and I won't try to speak for them, but certainly there's somebody called an anesthetist. So the person who's in charge of keeping you calm, keeping you sedated or putting you to sleep for the procedure, if that is what is being done, they will take control of that and use measures to control your blood sugars in the interim if it's an emergency procedure. If it's not an emergency procedure, then you're usually referred to your usual doctor to get a control of the blood sugar before the procedure is done. So to answer your question, it all depends on the risk of waiting, and it all depends on what procedure is being done and how it's being done that would determine if your blood sugars will slow down, whether or not the procedure is done in a quick manner.
So you mean that you're saying that the you should not get the operation if the sugar level is high.
So what we're trying to do is balance the risks. If it's necessary to save your vision, we've spoken about the role of the anesthesiologist. He or she is the doctor who is responsible, like Dr. Curtin said, for controlling your blood sugars, for putting you to sleep or keeping you sedated if it's not a full procedure where you have to go to sleep. So we're not saying that we have to absolutely wait until your blood sugars are completely normal in order to do an emergency operation. Because if it's an emergency, if it's the only thing that's going to save your vision at that particular point in time, or for example, if it were another operation, you know, if it were your appendix that were inflamed, we wouldn't necessarily wait until your blood sugar was plumb between 5 and 7 to say, let's go ahead and operate. Those are things that can be managed during surgery. If it's not an emergency, then we will try to get your blood sugars under control. And it's easier to do surgeries once all of those things which Dr. Curtin mentioned, blood pressure, blood sugar, medications, and so on, if all of those things are appropriately controlled and well managed to do a surgery, as opposed to having to do anything under emergency conditions. There's so many things that can happen under emergency conditions. So what you will have to do, sir, which is what we advise all persons who call on the show, is have that discussion with your physician, whether it be the ophthalmologist, whether it be your primary care physician, publicly or privately, air your concerns and let them advise, and together you make the best decision for you.
Are you good with that answer?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sir. Thank you kindly. Thank you very much. Thanks for your call. 15 away from the hour of 7 o'clock, you're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. Just to remind you that this week's edition of the Better Health Radio Show is brought to you with the kind compliments of Servier, Central America, and the Caribbean. Doc, we've got a query for you. This one says, Gretchen asked the doctor if they think that insulin is better for diabetes management than tablets. It goes on to say, I personally think that insulin controls better than tablets. People see insulin as meaning diabetes is worse when we take insulin. What is your take on this? Did you get that or you want me to repeat?
I got it. All right. We got it. We actually touched a little bit on it at the top of the show where we said that the role of insulin in managing diabetes is not only changing, but being seen differently. The introduction of insulin into management now is being seen as not something to be ashamed of or to be afraid of, but to be seen as a tool to optimize your sugars as quickly as possible. There's a theory out there called metabolic memory. And very quickly, what that means is that the body tends to remember the times in which the sugars were high, and that puts you at risk of complications later on in life. So even when you get it right, if you went many, many years with high blood sugars, you're still at risk of the complications. So to say that, I want to say that insulin The role of insulin depends on how much insulin your body is producing and how well you're responding to it. So you can have someone who has diabetes, they're still very sensitive to insulin, and they just need one tablet. And that tablet could be metformin, for example, the workhorse in diabetes management. And they might just need one 500 milligram tablet of metformin XR, and their A1C is to target, and it's pristine, and they're getting excellent control. On the other hand, you can have someone of a similar age, they for some reason had diabetes for the same length of time, but they're more insulin resistant. So that means that their body is not responding to insulin. And as I said before, eventually, it's like flogging a dead horse, more or less. Your body is not responding to insulin. And so it's a state of insulin deficiency, even though you have this insulin there. And the only solution from there is to do what? To give insulin. And you will find then that once you have insulin on board, even again, it could be as small as 10 units once a day, because you were missing those precious 10 units, you will have that same control as someone who's on metformin 500 once a day. So it's, I wouldn't compare tablets to insulin. I would compare what is the individual state of insulin resistance and where are they along the timeline. I would have said earlier that diabetes is dynamic. So that means that what works for you in year one might not work for you in year three. It might not work for you in year five. However, there's some people who are on the same regimen for 5 years. And that's because that's how their bodies are. So I don't want us to get into the context of comparing insulin and tablets. I want us to get into looking at individualized medicine and what is right for you, the individual, to get your sugars under control.
Yeah, that's the point that I was going to make, Kristen, that you really should not compare your diabetes management with the management of another individual, and which is why we are trying to promote in medicine that healthcare team approach to diabetes care. There are some persons who a physician might be having problems trying to get an individual's blood sugars under control, but a simple thing like a referral to a nutritionist makes the world of difference in the management of this person's diabetes. And we want to take the time out again to say thank you to all those men and women who are involved in the care of patients with diabetes. All right. I believe that there is another query.
Yes, that is quite true. Doc. This one says, can I use honey instead of sugar in my tea if I'm a diabetic?
No, it's not at me, because you and I are going to have a discussion on salt bread. So I'm giving you the honey. I'm giving you the honey. Go right ahead.
You are something else, Dr. Boyce.
No, the public can't see what's happening, but I can see.
Sugar is sugar. I would say, again, I will take the easy way out of this one, to be honest with you, and say I like to use the individualized approach. Honey is sugar. I would say that you're not really, you might find a circumstance where taking a spoonful of honey doesn't do you as much as the 2 spoonfuls of sugar. And it's not necessarily because the honey is any better. It's just the proportion of sugar that might have been in that amount of honey that you use. But I always tell patients to do the test. Take the honey. Check your blood sugar 2 hours after and see if it spikes and see where you live. But for me personally, I would say the honey and the sugar are pretty much synonymous, pretty much similar.
Yes, please do not let it be said that on the Better Health Radio Show, Dr. Kristen Curtin said to the public to go and use honey. Okay, please take it in context. It was said in light of trying to figure out what honey does to an individual's blood sugar and whether or not that person should go ahead and use honey as an alternative to sugar. And whilst we are on alternatives, what about those artificial sweeteners?
Yeah, I mean, that's a popular question. When I would have studied before, we would have said that, yes, those are good in terms of not causing your blood sugars to spike. But the issue with those artificial sweeteners is that they haven't been around for a long enough period of time to determine if they have any long-lasting effects that we're not aware of just yet. So they're safe from the standpoint of they won't spike you, in terms of they won't cause large rises in your blood sugar levels. But in terms of using them every day religiously or adding them to everything to make up for that sweet taste, I wouldn't advise it just yet, not until we can prove that they truly are safe in the long term.
One of the things we want to caution persons about, we're having this discussion about sugar, and the basic unit of sugar goes right down to glucose. Glucose is the fuel that the body uses. And however you break sugar down is going to be broken into those basic units. So persons who are diabetic should not think, and this is persons in general too, because there's no such thing as a diabetic diet per se. So you shouldn't think as a person who has diabetes that you can go ahead and instead of not having any sugar that you're going to sit down and eat 20 grapes because it's natural and it's a natural sugar. Because rest assured, when you do that test after, your blood sugar is going to spike. It's going to go up. So this is where we talk about proportions and the glycemic index of foods. And this is where individuals can take care of their own health. You can go online, research glycemic index and what it means, and look at the different foods which have what we term in medicine a high glycemic index, those foods which are going to send your blood sugars up very quickly, as opposed to those which are slow burning and tend not to create that spike in your blood sugar. And therefore, you plan your meals and you choose your snacks based on the different sugar levels in these foods. So we're not saying as a diabetic, you can't ever in life have a grape, but it is the number of grapes and how often you do it. I distinctly remember when I was working at the polyclinic in January, when patients would come in for their checks and the nurse would do the blood sugar before, you would see a random sugar of 16, 15. And after a while, after the niceties, you know, good afternoon, I'm Dr. Boyce, how are you doing? And so on and so forth. My next question would be, what was it? Put in our grape cake. Because.
Or in mango season.
I was just going to say in mango season. My question was not if you were eating mangoes, how many mangoes did you have? And sometimes patients would tell me that they had 4, 5, half a bucket. How can you sit down and eat half a bucket of mangoes? I don't know. Just puzzled. So we are approaching the end of our show. The time always seems to fly when you are having fun. And we have been discussing with Dr. Kristen Curtin the basics of diabetes. I firmly believe that if we grasp the basics, if we get people to understand these things, then there will be better management of diabetes. In these last few minutes, Kristen, before we go, let's touch on some of the complications of diabetes and reasons why persons would want to control their blood sugars.
Of course. So the complications of diabetes, unfortunately, are numerous. And I like to think of it as from your head to your toe, right? It affects the body literally from your head to your toe. So starting at the head, diabetes can cause stroke, unfortunately. Diabetes can affect the back of the eyes and cause visual impairment. Diabetes can cause glaucoma. Diabetes can also increase the risk of cataract. Coming down to the mouth, diabetes can cause gum disease. Okay, coming down even further, so yeah, the chest, diabetes increases the risk of heart attack. Coming down further, diabetes can affect the kidneys and cause kidney disease, and it's actually one of the leading reasons that persons go on dialysis in Barbados. So I just wanted to highlight that. Come down further, we have the limbs, for example, diabetes can cause what we call neuropathy, which is pins and needles, sometimes burning, painful sensation to the feet, and cause you not to feel as much. And because you don't feel as much, you can step on something like a nail, a thorn, and that predisposes you to infection, wounds, and of course, the dreaded amputation. But I want to stress here that diabetes does not equal amputation.
Okay,
it really does not. It's about doing the things necessary to reduce that risk, which involves checking your feet daily, cleaning your feet properly, ensuring that you have a podiatrist, someone to cut those toenails for you. I need to stress this and keep an eye on your feet at all times. If at any time you step on something big, small, not sure, get it evaluated by a doctor on the same day that you stepped on something. And fungal infections just to finish off at the nails for completion. So those yes. aren't all, but those are some of the complications.
And one of those things for foot care in the diabetic does not only involve inspection, it actually involves feeling, especially those diabetics who are visually impaired. And those persons who have the sensory neuropathies, those persons who have pins and needles and can't feel at the bottom of their feet. The podiatrists have several collections of photos of people who walk into their offices with nails and thumbtacks and pieces of wood. And after doing debridements, you hear pling, a piece of glass has fallen out of somebody's foot. So again, the foot care involves touching and feeling. And if you can't see, ask somebody in your household to look for you. And if you notice any change in color of your foot is supposed to be the same color that you essentially were born with. So red and black are not good colors for a foot. It might be good for a Valentine's outfit, but not good for a foot. I'm just getting some looks here in the studio.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, Christian.
Yes, before you run away, there's a query here. They're asking you, what is a good blood pressure level? That's the query.
It depends, again, on your age. It depends on the goals that the physician is trying to achieve. Generally speaking, normal blood pressure is rated at less than 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. 120, the top reading is systolic. 80, the bottom reading is diastolic. For those persons who are elderly, for example, and we spoke about the 90-something-year-old granny who is living her life like it's golden, and she has high blood pressure. She has a blood pressure, let's say, of 147 over 80, and she's quite fine. I really don't think that we would beat her over the head to get her down to 120 over 80. But generally speaking, the closer you are to that normal value of under 120 over 80 is ideal. However, there are some conditions where you don't want your blood sugar to be too low because that puts you at risk for some of the cardiovascular events that we are really trying to prevent in the first place by managing your blood pressure. So it's individualized as well. This is between you and your physician. And of course, with the guidelines, what your blood pressure should be and what things you should do in order to manage your blood pressure. So we can't say that the value that everybody's blood pressure should be at is 120 on 80. Not at all. It's individualized and it depends on what other chronic illnesses that you might have as well, your lifestyle and so on and so forth.
All right. I hope the listener heard that. So they also asked me to thank you very kindly for another informative show. So thank you kindly for another informative show.
Oh, most welcome. It was my pleasure. And of course, most of the thanks must go to Dr. Curtin for her easy to understand way of explaining things to our listeners. And thank you very much for taking time out from your recovery.
And don't forget, you have to Don't forget, you have to shout out somebody before you leave.
Yes, I want to say thank you. I received a couple of WhatsApps that said that there was someone who had called into another one of the stations on at Starcom and had mentioned that they found that the Better Health Radio Show was a very informative program and that they enjoyed listening to it. I don't know who the individual is, but I really do want to say thank you for giving us props here on the show. And we really do enjoy bringing the show to you. So thank you. Thank you so much. And it has been another wonderful... My tongue seems to be tied today. I don't know what is going on, but it's been another wonderful show. I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks. We have very exciting shows coming up.
But birthday celebrations are in the year. You were supposed to tell us when the day was. Last week, you said later on.
Oh, yes. Okay, fine. You know, if you must drag it out of me.
As you don't want to tell us, really?
Our anniversary was Friday, just gone.
Very good.
And I'm looking forward, Lord willing, for my birthday on the 28th of November.
So just Saturday. That's a Saturday.
I'm celebrating all month long.
That's a Saturday, isn't it?
course.
Then we see you this following day, the Sunday. Very well.
Yes, and that show has already been planned as well at Skegston. We are on top of things. And that show, I know that is going to be fun. Get your thinking caps on, because that is Better Health, the Independence edition.
Thank you, Curly Doc. Congrats on the anniversary, and have a happy birthday Saturday. Dr. Kristen Curtin, we want to thank you for your contribution as well. And until we meet again,
thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks again, everybody.
Bye.
All right, that's Dr. Renee Boyce and her guest, Dr. Kristen Curtin, giving you the Better Health Radio Show for today, Sunday, the 15th of November, 2020. Next weekend, we'll come back again for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show.